Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 7 of the 2025 college football season is in the books, and with us officially halfway through the 2025 college football season, it is do or die time for a lot of teams out there as we are getting ready for our own playoff pushes in our leagues. As always, we've got a new round of players on the freakout scale, then we'll take a look at some waiver wire players you should be avoiding, and then we'll get to a whole new set of players that you will be wanting to add from the waiver wire this week. All of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us in all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season, 6 a.m. sharp. You can also find us live at Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that's CFF, Devy, Campus Canton Leagues, College DFS, Underdog Basketball. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, use that promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y. You can't do that? Totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. Then on the podcast side of things, just leave a 5-star review and make sure you are following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also just the entire game of college fantasy football in general, a ton of support. If you've got further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And, yeah. Hi, guys. Been a minute. God, this is so awkward to start again. So I missed you guys. It's been about 2 weeks for those of you that don't follow me on Twitter, or maybe you missed my posts here on YouTube, or if you're just listening to this on podcast, if you're just looking on Spotify, there's no way you could know. But if you guys definitely noticed that I've been gone the last couple of weeks, and before I kind of start getting into explaining all that and everything, I do want to take a minute here to thank Nate Marquise and Chris Moxley for doing the waiver wire content the last couple of weeks, which I normally do here at campusofcanton.com, but obviously with me being away, they took that on and they did a phenomenal job. Nate did the waiver wire article over on the website. Chris, obviously, if you're listening to the show, has been doing it the last couple of weeks. And like I said, they did a great job and they legitimately made my job harder today, right? Because I'm going through and I'm checking, you know, what guys they've already talked about and everything. And I just had to keep crossing guys off the list because they did such a good job the last couple of weeks. So, again, thank you, Nate. Thank you, Chris. You guys really, really helped out a ton. I owe you guys one in a big way. Outside of that, again, for those of you that might be confused by the last couple of weeks and, you know, like I said, just didn't see any of my posts or anything, unfortunately, about 2.5 weeks ago, my dad was killed in a car crash, and so I've been taking some time away to grieve and work through all the immediate things for his estate and everything, and a lot of, you know, everything else that comes with that. And so, yeah, like I said, I've learned more about Alabama state law in the last 2 weeks than I ever really cared to do so. But yeah, that's where I've been. I had to make that decision. I couldn't handle doing all that and the show at the same time. So really my next thank you goes out to all of you guys out there, right? Because not only you not only guys did you provide understanding, but I really truly can say you guys provided a ton of true support. Like, you guys overwhelmed me with the love and support that I got when I announced that I was stepping away for a bit on Twitter, and I appreciate everyone that checked in on me and then continued to check in over the last couple of weeks. It really has shown me like just how much of a community we really are. And yeah, like I said, like I just can't thank you guys enough for that. So yeah, boy, I didn't really plan on how to transition from that to actually what we're going to talk about here today. So I guess we'll just hop right into it. Yeah, waiver wires week 7. Here we go. We're back to it. Like I said, Nate and Chris did a great job. So you can go if really, I would say, especially at quarterback this week, like a lot of the players, especially on the honorable mentions today, are going to be players that they've talked about before. And I would say that the guys that they got to talk about are better than the quarterbacks that we will talk about here today. So go check out those shows if you haven't already. Or if you just need a refresher, go listen to those shows anyway. So yeah, I guess where does that leave us in terms of entering week 8? Like I said, kind of the opening of the show is really do or die time, right? Like in my dynasty leagues, the trade deadline has passed, a lot of them this past weekend, some of them very soon. Regardless, like right now is the time where a lot of us are kind of deciding, are we competing this year, are we not? Most leagues, we got about 3 to 5 weeks left in the regular season before playoffs start. So you're really trying to figure out, like, am I going to make a run this year or am I not? And like I said, it all culminates to just one simple fact, and that is it's time to get serious, right? Like, not that we haven't been serious already, but, you know, it's time to really kind of get your teams figured out. And luckily for us, again, the waiver wire for college fantasy continues to kind of provide and stuff like that. So we'll definitely get well into that. But first, you guys know the drill. The show is divided up into 3 segments. We got the freakout scale, we got the waiver traps, and then we'll get to the actual waiver wire players. So let's hop on over to the freakout scale for this week. Again, shout out to the NIL tier over at campusagain.com. They help us out every single week with deciding what players we'll be talking about for the freakout scale. And for those of you who are still unfamiliar with what this is, basically this is our drop segment in a way, right? Where we talk about players that we've been relying on, guys we drafted pretty highly, and we're deciding where we are in terms of like what to do with them, especially if they haven't been performing super well recently. So we have 4 guys to talk about here today. The first 2 that we'll discuss are Cam Coleman, the wide receiver out of Auburn, and then TJ Harden, running back at SMU. Again, two different guys here, right? Cam Coleman, very much a guy we drafted early in drafts this year, been holding on to him despite the fact that he's really not performed that well, unfortunately. Again, I don't know exactly where he lines up in terms of, you know, wide receiver ranking for the year. I'd have to look that up real quick. Where is my, there we go, found it. Let's see if I can find Cam Coleman. I should have just listed this, but I know he's low, and I think he's outside the top 100, like just not great at all for him. Cam Coleman, wide receiver 171, so just real bad, and that reflects in the freaking out scale ratings we have right now, right? Nate, surprisingly, like, normally Nate's kind of the pessimist. He's willing to kind of go pretty high on this freakout scale. He's actually the optimist here. He's got Cam Coleman at a 6. Meanwhile, Kay and I, much higher. I got him at a 9, and Kay's got him at an 8. And there's a couple of reasons why I'm pretty much, if I have Cam Coleman, I'm just kind of done. I think the only share I have left of him is in like a campus account league, because again, dude's a great wide receiver. Problem is, he's just not put in a place to really succeed this year, right? He had a great end of the year in 2024, and we all thought that was kind of be a sign of things to come here, but obviously as things have played out, it hasn't really turned out that well. Cam Coleman, 39 targets on the year in 6 games, so you're talking about less than 7 targets a game. He's gotten a lot more targets in recent games, right? He's got 8 targets versus Texas A&M, 10 targets versus Georgia, but that has not amounted to much at all, right? Like, again, he's had 18 yards versus Texas A&M and 50 yards versus Georgia. It's just not, he's just not in a place to succeed. Jackson Arnold, God bless him, just not a very good quarterback at this point. And it really just limits this whole offense in a huge, huge way, and especially Cam Coleman. And so I think I'm out on him. He's not even like the clear wide receiver one, because Eric Singleton's behind him with 37 targets compared to Cam Coleman's 39. Coleman's only outproduced Singleton by about 26 yards on the season, 2 touchdowns for both of them. It's just, like I said, just not a place where he can succeed at all, and I think I'm out. I'm almost out of 10 with Cam Coleman in terms of redraft. Maybe we have a late season surge like we did last year, so that's kind of why I'm at a 9, but right now, can't do it. The other one we can discuss here is TJ Harden, the running back out of SMU. Again, while Coleman was the guy we drafted early on, Harden was the guy that I drafted, but really a lot of his like ownership came after drafts, and he really kind of started breaking out for SMU. Those games against Baylor and Missouri State really kind of sold us on the idea that he could end up being this workhorse back for SMU. In those games, he had 19 and 15 carries. Averaged 100 yards, averaged 2.5 touchdowns in those games. Obviously, the touchdowns we felt like were to come down a little bit, but then now we're looking at the volume slowly decreasing, right? We went to 15 carries versus TCU. He only had 56 yards in that game. 16 carries versus Syracuse. Syracuse, not a good defense at all. 66 yards in that game. And you've really seen a huge hit to his efficiency recently, going from 5.3 yards versus FCS opponents, 6.1 and 6.4 versus Baylor and Missouri State, now down to really just averaging right at about 4 yards a carry, and that's impacted him in a huge way there. And I don't really know if this is going to bounce back. It really does seem like that either defense has kind of figured out Harden, or, you know, he's banged up in a way that's not really being disclosed to us. And so all I can just look at is the stats here and the fact he hasn't scored a touchdown in 3 games. He hasn't broke 70 yards despite getting 15, 16 touches in every single game. And then this last week against Stanford, Stanford's defense is horrendous. You would think he would kind of break out against that again. Nope, actually had his worst game so far with 3.3 yards per rush. And, you know, a couple other running backs kind of made their statement in that game to potentially, you know, get more carries as well. So I personally see things just kind of getting worse here for Harden. I've got him at a 7. I don't think you can fully bench him. I think, you know, there's still some hope that he can rebound at some point, especially if this is kind of banged up injury related, that maybe he can get healthy after a bye week or something. Who knows? But right now, I'm pretty worried. Nate's got him at an 8. Chris has got him at a 6. So we're all right there next to each other. Let's move on to our other two freakout scale candidates, and that is going to be 2 running backs. One is Rashad Dubinion out of App State, and the other one's going to be Darius Taylor, running back out of Minnesota. All of us are bunched together at 6-7 for Rashad Dubinion. This sucks. This really sucks, because you look at the first several games of this year, and you look like you saw a absolute grand slam in terms of a waiver wire pickup early on, right? Like 22 carries, 25 carries, 24 carries, 17 carries, 19 carries. Pure workhorse for the Mountaineers was Rashad Dubinion. And then we got some real, and I mean real, curveballs thrown our way this past week. One, App State with J.J. Cole under center, and they were kind of doing this with A.J. Swan as well. But I noted in our CFF Slack at some point where I was just like, App State's being real weird. It's like they have a middle schooler playing Xbox as their offensive coordinator right now, because they were throwing the ball a ton, and I mean a ton, up 24 points against Georgia State this past weekend. Like running the ball was secondary to them. And then Rashad Dubinion only got 12 carries in this game for 56 yards. And unfortunately, we are starting to see the emergence of Jakari Lewis. Jakari Lewis is their secondary back there, and his volume has slowly but surely increased as the weeks have gone on. He has 6 touches 4 weeks ago, 7 touches 3 weeks ago, 10 touches 2 weeks ago, and then this past week with 15 touches versus Georgia State, actually out-touching Rashad Dubinion. So, yeah, big, big worries here. Again, maybe there's a bit of an injury here that is being unfortunately, just isn't being super disclosed to us. But I still think that there is some cause for alarm here. I definitely think you're well past the point of you need to be looking at a running back to try to replace Dubinion in case things do get worse. And what I'm afraid of is the staff, before the season started, really had it in their head of like a two-headed monster between Rashad Dabinion and Kondi Roberts. Kondi Roberts goes down right before the season. You don't really have time to really build up a second back to be a complementary back to Dabinion, so you just ride with Dabinion. But now as we get closer, or as we get further along through the season, you know, with the emergence of Lewis here, Lewis, by the way, performing pretty dang well, I think that, definitely a lot of cause to be concerned with Dabinion. I would definitely be looking for a backup plan for him right now and monitoring this extremely, extremely closely. And then the last one here is Darius Taylor. Darius Taylor, we don't normally do injuries, and this isn't quite injuries, but he is coming back from an injury, and unfortunately, what we've seen so far is just not... It's concerning. I tried to come up with a better word there, but it's just straight up concerning, right? Ohio State, first game back, 8 carries, 12 yards, like, got destroyed. Minnesota as a whole got destroyed in that game. So, like, everybody was kind of willing to give him a pass for that. Then you get this week against Purdue. Purdue, a better team than they were last year, but certainly not a defensive juggernaut or anything. And Taylor got 14 carries, got every carry in this game, but 32 yards total. They just couldn't run the ball hardly at all. He got 6 catches for 67 yards, but this inefficiency running the ball is certainly concerning for Darius Taylor. Hopefully this is something that improves as he continues to come back, but you know, we're really hoping this Purdue game is going to be a get right spot for him. But I think for now, I got him at a 5. I'd say definitely look for a backup plan. If you've been holding on to him for IR, you bring him back. One, you've probably already got a backup plan. Like, as soon as he went on the IR, you probably went and grabbed another running back. That's probably good for you. So you're probably already doing all right. But at the same time, I think, you know. Sorry, I just had a... My brain just completely froze there for a second. I think that, you know, definitely cause for concern with Darius Taylor. Chris has got him at a 6. Nate's got him all the way up as an 8. He thinks you can't start Taylor right now, which I kind of get, but you know, if we look at, you know, future matchups here in the Big Ten, you're hoping he gets healthier. There's some that he can definitely take advantage of. We'll have to see though. All right, that's enough for Freecast Scale. Talked about that long enough. Let's go talk about some waiver wire traps. Again, these are guys that performed pretty well this past week, and unfortunately, I'm sitting here saying not so fast, my friend, in the classic Lee Corso saying. And let's start with quarterback J.C. French here out of Georgia Southern. This past week, he played Southern Miss, and he put up a really solid 32.32 fantasy points in four-point passing touchdown leagues. He had 2 rushing touchdowns on the ground, 2 touchdowns through the air, had a season high of 313 yards, season high in pass attempts as well with 43. And that's kind of the bulk of this, right, is... Yeah, that 32 looked really nice this past weekend. You're sitting there thinking, okay, he's getting into some belt play. Maybe there's some more shootout potential. That's kind of what we got here. It really was, and I'll get to that in a second, but really just, again, look at his first 6 or 5 games and tell me this isn't an outlier, right? 15 points, 14 points, 20 points, 18 points, 9 points, 32 points, right? French is just not really a guy we can rely on for CFF. And you can sit here and say that, you know, like I said, Sun Belt competition level, you get into some shootouts there, he could be really good. That's fine and dandy, but this was like a perfect script for French to have himself a really, really nice game here. One, Southern Miss got out to a huge lead. It forced Georgia Southern to play from behind. And then two, the way Southern Miss played this game was so weird. They got out to a 35-14 point lead and then just completely gave up on throwing the ball at all, right, and just kept handing off to Pittman, but they weren't scoring points, and they just kept giving the ball back to Georgia Southern, got them a ton of possessions in this game, and so that's why I think kind of added to French's ability to, you know, play against, prevent defense the whole second half practically. And so again, this was like a perfect scenario for French. I don't think he replicates it the rest of the season. Cameron Pettaway is another guy that I would say avoid. This is a classic waiver wire trap. Dude had 5 touches in this game, 2 touchdowns, had two receptions that averaged 59 yards per reception. Just, again, just a pure outlier for him. He's never going to do that ever again. Chris Johnson, I mentioned with TJ Harden earlier that some guys kind of made their case to start getting more touches, and Chris Johnson's definitely one of those guys here, but I'm also not saying don't pick him up off the waiver wire, right? Five rush attempts for 96 yards. By the way, 87 of those came on one carry. And then he also had two receptions for 42 yards. So you're averaging 20 yards per touch, two touchdowns between seven touches. Again, just not sustainable at all, obviously. Maybe he gets more touches going forward because, again, he looked really good in this game versus, you know, TJ Harden, not so good. Maybe that starts to change. Maybe this becomes an actual waiver play down the stretch. But right now, I can't recommend it. Chris Reed, wide receiver out of Sam Houston, another classic waiver wire trap. You know, 63 yards, two touchdowns. We have been looking for that Phil Longo wide receiver one, but this still sure isn't it. He had four targets on the day, caught three of them. Two of them were touchdowns. Just not sustainable for him at all in an offense that is constantly spreading the ball around. There's no real main target in this offense. And then last but not least is Chris Barnes, wide receiver out of Wake Forest. One, ecstatic to see that with DeShone Purdy starting at quarterback. Yes, it was against Oregon State, but with DeShone Purdy starting at quarterback, these receivers were definitely more involved in this offense. Barnes benefiting a ton, three catches, 102 yards, and three touchdowns, but there you go. That's exactly it. He had five touches on the day. Three of them were touchdowns. It again, just not sustainable. Could I see Barnes, you know, improving that in the future? Sure. But at the same time, he's had some real duds the last couple of weeks. You know, six targets versus Georgia Tech, but only 39 yards. Seven targets versus Virginia Tech, but only 21 yards to show there. Just, you know, very up and down in his performances. So I would not recommend picking him up off the waiver wire this week. So after a sip of water, then we'll get to some waiver ads for this week. So, all right, let's get to it. Before we dive too deep into it, again, you guys know me, I like to kind of give a little overview of what to kind of expect for this week. And, you know, obviously, like I said, Chris and Nate did a great job the last couple of weeks, but we are all discussing in the slot that, like, the last couple of weeks, man, it was real barren on the waiver wire. There weren't really a lot of guys that were truly, like, jumping out to you. And if there were, there was just so much uncertainty kind of surrounding so many of them. But, you know, by now, we've seen enough to know that some guys like Jeffrey Pittman at Southern Miss and some others are very legit and here to stay as assets. But, you know, we've already talked about them, so you won't see them again here on today's list. But, you know, you guys are wondering, you know, what does the market offer this week? And I would say this is probably the best waiver market we've had in the last 3 weeks. I will say if you're looking for quarterbacks, you pretty much kind of know the names by now. Like I said at the top of the show, there's a couple of dual threat quarterbacks that have some really good upside here. I did want to correct our recommendation for one player last week that was listed as a waiver trap. But most of the quarterbacks today that we'll be talking about are ones you're probably grabbing, sticking on your bench, and then being able to play in the right matchups. Hardly any kind of weekly starters on the waiver this week. Running back, a couple of injuries have led to some real opportunities opening for both players and for managers who have been struggling in that position, so stay tuned for that. And then at wide receiver, really outside of one player, all of these guys are going to be risk of some kind. But I think there's plenty of potential to be excited about. So, like I said, with all that being said, let's take a look at who we got. And remember that every single one of these players are rostered at least less than 30% in Fantrax CFF League. So, let's get started here with Mr. Mason Heinschel, the quarterback out of Pittsburgh, rostered in 14% of leagues. He had himself a really nice day. A really nice day, not only just in terms of stats, but also just in general. You know, not every day that Pitt gets to take down a ranked Florida State team. And he performed extremely well in this game. You know, 21 of 29 for 321 yards, two touchdowns through the air. He also ran the ball quite a bit, 16 rush attempts for 64 yards. And so, you know, Eli Holstein's been very much a will they, won't they kind of player for CFF for a while. Last year, he's off to a really hot start. And then, you know, he got hurt and things kind of really fell apart down the stretch. And then this year, he came back and things were kind of up and down there. Where did he actually finish at? I'm curious. Eli Holstein is, as of last week, I haven't updated the new stats with this week, was actually QB 65. So he wasn't like terrible stats wise. But again, anybody watching those pit games would know that Holstein was just erratic. And, you know, the offense was not flowing well at all. Versus with Heinschel, things are looking a lot better for the Panthers here. Again, a lot of consistency here and good consistency for CFF as well. You know, Nate in the waiver article named Heinschel a league winner. And I'm not sure I can really go that far. But, you know, Heinschel definitely in 86% of leagues where he's still on the waiver wire, definitely easily the best quarterback option you can pick up off the waiver wire right now. So cannot recommend him enough. And then again, the upcoming schedule is just so beautiful. Syracuse, NC State, Stanford, just three great ACC matchups. He is somebody that I think you can pick up and just start every single week from here on out. Rest of these guys, maybe not so much. Let's get to them. The next guy we'll discuss here is Mr. Caden Creel, the quarterback out of Jacksonville State, rostered on 1% of leagues. Nobody ever tell me that I don't go deep for these. And Creel is such a fun player, and I am deeply intrigued by him. I do keep wanting to call him Carl Creel. Shout out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. So if I do that accidentally, please forgive me. Anyway, who is Creel? Creel took over at quarterback for Jacksonville State over Gavin Wimsatt. Gavin Wimsatt, you know, performed all right, but definitely the offense was just not kind of like Eli Holstein. Again, there just wasn't a flow there that was really fitting. Creel comes in and very much one fits that exact same type of skill set, you know, extremely limited passer, elite runner, and it basically becomes a real-life version of the Suicide Squad meme where, you know, Idris Elba complains about John Cena's character, and then he's like, he does the exact same thing as me, to which Cena then replies, I do, but better. This is exactly the same thing with Wimsatt. Like, Wimsatt's sitting on the bench being like, bro, Creel does the exact same thing as me, and Creel's on the field being like, yeah, but I do it better. And better he has been. Like, Creel's passing isn't anything to write home about, right? He only has 238 total passing yards in two games as a starter, but his rushing's elite. He's seen 23 plus rushing attempts in both games, tally 293 rushing yards and two touchdowns total on the ground in those games. Like, him and Cam Cook are such a dangerous duo in the Sun Belt. Like, I'm not sure the rest of the Sun Belt's quite ready for this combo of players. If you have Cam Cook, this is such a fun grab to throw into your lineup and just have an offense that's going to put up some points every single week. And, you know, one of two guys is going to touch the ball on any given play, Caden Creel or Cam Cook. They've got dates with Delaware and Middle Tennessee State in the coming week. So I think those are excellent spots for a spot start if you need them, especially with all the bye weeks coming up. So I like Creel a lot. Again, his rushing is just absolutely insane. Even in a half game against Murray State, Creel still put up 58 yards and a touchdown. Like, he's going to score, and he's going to get some rushing yardage that's going to make him a really safe play at quarterback every season. So I like him quite a lot. A guy that's actually extremely similar, though, is Brock Lowry, the quarterback out of Western Michigan. And I'll eat a little bit of crow here. This is kind of that rare kind of crow where I didn't actually say anything about Lowry, like, out there or anything like that. But I will fully admit to you guys that I had my thoughts about Western Michigan. And when I saw the type of offense that Western Michigan seemed to be kind of running this year, I fully admit, I just rolled my eyes with how spread out the carries were between all the running backs, how limited the passing volume was. Like, it just kind of struck me as a team that, one, just didn't understand its identity. It doesn't help that I really don't like Walt Bell as an offensive coordinator. And so, like, that bias kind of bled into me just kind of writing off this offense in general. And I have been proven so, so wrong in the week since. Like, this offense runs through Brock Lowry in a big way. And more importantly, it seems to be pretty sustainable, right? Like, it's really incredible to kind of look at Lowry's production so far. And when he's not playing a Power 4 opponent or an FCS squad, he's pretty much been a lock for 25 points. Like, guess what? But and guess what Lowry has left on his schedule? Nothing but Maction. Nothing but the games that have locked him in for 25 points a game. Right? Through seven games, Lowry has been elite on the ground. He's amassed 427 yards on the ground, seven touchdowns. That puts him on pace for 732 rushing yards and 12 touchdowns on the season. That is an insane floor for a quarterback moving forward, especially as he continues to play in the MAC. Add in the fact that despite his team kind of having some limited pass attempts per game, like Lowry's been averaging about 20 pass attempts per game, he finds a way to produce enough to supplement his rushing. Like, we're not talking about like a Matthew Sluka situation here where you're basically only relying on his rushing ability. So I think Lowry's a great pickup for teams kind of looking for a safe floor option to kind of plug in during bye weeks, especially during Maction play. I think he's a fun pickup. So those are our three quarterbacks for this week. I'll go through some honorable mentions at quarterback here real quick. Again, some really good guys still out there on the waiver wire. Carlos Del Rio Wilson, y'all. He's still available in 89% of leagues. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what else he needs to do. Like, he scored another four touchdowns this past week, ran for almost 100 yards. He had almost 40 fantasy points in a four-point passing touchdown league. Keep it going. Or go pick him up, please, for the love of God. His next opponent is Texas State, so he's just going to keep rolling from there. Anthony Calandria, quarterback in UNLV, still surprised he's under 30%. He's at 29%. Maybe this time next week he'll be gone because, or he'll be over 30% because, boy, he put up a great stat line against Air Force, 36.6 fantasy points there. Nick Minicucci, the quarterback out of Delaware, rostered 21% of leagues. He had himself a really nice game 2 weeks ago against Western Kentucky. Again, I'm so shocked that he's still pretty widely available, especially with his rushing ability. Ryan Brown, the quarterback out of Purdue. You know, like I said, Purdue is an improved team this year, as we saw against Minnesota, and Brown's been really solid, especially rushing on the ground. We know Barry Odom, based on what he did at UNLV, not afraid to use a dual threat quarterback. And, you know, Brown's been really, really solid pretty much every single week. I think he's hit under 20 points just once this year. And so I will expect him to continue to do so with that. His next opponent is Northwestern. That's a really nice matchup right there. And last but not least, Connor Wiegman, another guy that's just been out on the waiver wire for a while. I'm surprised more people haven't picked him up. He's been really solid against OK State this last week. You know, almost 26 fantasy points. He's got Arizona upcoming. Some really nice Big 12 matchups for him down the line. So, that being said, let's move on to running backs. Let's start with Mr. King Miller, the running back out of USC, rostered on 2% of leagues. And, you know, injuries in this sport are a real, you know, double-edged sword, right? We really hate when injuries open the door for waiver pickups, but unfortunately it is part of the game and it does lead to a lot of really good pickups, especially this late in the season. And to me, there may not be a more important pickup in all of the waiver wire than true freshman walk-on running back here, King Miller. Like, Miller was already turning heads throughout the season, really solidifying himself as the clear number three back behind Wayman Jordan and Eli Sanders, which is pretty impressive because, you know, Brian Jackson was still there from the squad last year. It's the fact that he kind of got ahead of Jackson was very impressive. And unfortunately, in a single game, USC lost both Wayman Jordan and Eli Sanders to pretty significant injuries, to where both of them had to be carted off the field. And for those of you kind of wondering for an update, I did some research, and shout out to the guys at 247. They kind of laid this out and what Lincoln Riley had to say. And the initial expectations is that Jordan will miss multiple weeks with an ankle injury. And Lincoln Riley said in the post-game conference that there's no official diagnosis on Eli Sanders' knee. They are personally preparing for the worst in terms of, you know, what could happen the rest of the season. So that doesn't sound very good. So at least for the next couple of weeks, this backfield is going to be King Miller's, and he looked great. He took this opportunity very, very well against a very solid Michigan defense. Miller didn't miss a beat when it came to USC's rushing production. Toted the rock 18 times for 158 yards and a touchdown. Added two receptions for 14 yards as well. This was pretty much just a Wayman Jordan stat line, just under a different name. Like, he'll have some tough matchups coming up, right? He's got Notre Dame, a bye week, and then Nebraska's D. I'm very worried about that Nebraska game. Their defense when against the run is very, very solid. But at the same time, like, I would have said that Miller would have struggled against Michigan, and, you know, all he did was prove me very, very wrong running for almost 10 yards a carry, right? So I think Miller will be fine. I think he'll plug right into the system, and we should see some pretty solid production for him. And then we'll see, you know, 3 weeks down the line in terms of what the return timetable for Jordan looks like. So next running back I want to throw up here is Mr. Jeffrey Pittman. I don't believe he's actually been listed on this show. I know that Nate discussed him in the waiver article, but I want to make sure that those of you who are listening to the podcast and the show get to know him as well. He's still widely available. He's only rostered in 6% of leagues. And, you know, we don't really typically think of Blake Anderson as, you know, a guy who would tote a workhorse back. But, you know, in the last couple of years at Utah State, we did see Utah State start to kind of go with that workhorse back. Calvin Tyler Jr. specifically comes to mind. And as we've seen the last couple of weeks, this staff here at Southern Miss is very much becoming more reliant on Jeffrey Pittman. He has looked good. You know, he is a power four running back transferring down to Southern Miss. He used to be at Mississippi State, and he's looked really solid, especially last 2 weeks. Again, against Jacksonville State, 18 rush attempts for 80 yards and 2 touchdowns. This past week against Georgia Southern, 31 rush attempts for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. As I mentioned earlier, I got super annoyed with Southern Miss and the fact that they refused to just throw the ball after a certain point. And this man right here was to blame. They thought they could rely on Pittman to an absurd degree and just kept running the ball with him. And I don't think this is going to change moving forward. I think he'll continue to be their workhorse back. And he's got some really good matchups here. You know, you got Louisiana Lafayette this week, UL Monroe the week after, then the bye. And they'll continue to ravage through the Sun Belt, right? Again, Blake Anderson's offense is more than good enough to keep the scoring coming. And given the fact that Pittman has scored 2 touchdowns in every game in the last 3 weeks, I think they'll dry up a little bit. But it's so very clear that, like, the moment they get within the 5-yard line, they know who the ball is going to. They're going to give it to Pittman. They're going to tell him to go score. So Pittman, fantastic pickup in so many leagues this week. Next up, let's discuss Mr. Coleman Bennett, the running back out of Kennesaw State, rostered on 3% of leagues. He comes from the Kennesaw State Owls, who, by the way, don't look now, currently in the driver's seat for a spot in the USC or in the CUSA championship in year 2 of FBS play. Just saying. I'm so proud of the Owls. Y'all know I'm a Georgia fan, but, like, the funny thing with, like, Kennesaw State, so, like, with Georgia Tech, with a lot of rivalries, you kind of talk about them being brothers, right? And brothers that are just constantly fighting and everything. I don't know, Georgia Tech fans, you can tell me or not, but, like, for me, I always kind of view, like, Kennesaw State as, like, the little sister, which sounds so degrading, but, like, what I mean by that is, like, those of you who have a brother and those of you who have, especially those of you who know, have a little sister, you know the exact feeling, right? Where you'll mess with them, you know, as their brother, you'll make their life a living hell sometimes. But the moment that hell comes from outside the family and somebody else starts messing with them, you grab the baseball bats and you start sticking up for them so quickly. That's basically the relationship I have with Kennesaw State. Anyway, sorry for the tangent there. But like I said, Kennesaw State has had a lot of success this year, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, they've made that offensive shift from an option system to a veer and shoot system. It's worked out way better this year. And with veer and shoot systems, you do often see them rely on a workhorse back who is above the rest of the room, especially because the system is so reliant on a stable run game. So if you have a guy that is going to continuously get you rushing production, these veer and shoot coaches are not afraid to run with that guy. And that's exactly the case of what's been happening with Coleman Bennett after he transferred here from Rice. You know, the last few weeks, the Owls have really started to kind of get their feet under them offensively. A lot of it has to do with the quarterback play. Amari Odom kind of gave them the jolt they needed on offense. Dexter Williams came back and, you know, performed much better than he did before. But like I said, Coleman Bennett is another big piece here. doesn't have elite volume. He's been typically hovering around 13 to 20 touches each of the last 3 weeks, but he's managed to put together solid CFF performances in all three of the last couple of weeks. His best one yet coming this past week against Louisiana Tech, where he toted the rock 17 times for 73 yards. He also had 3 catches for 55 yards and a touchdown. I think the fact that, again, this is only just a sign of good things to come as Kennesaw State continues to play their way through COSA play. I think Bennett is one of these rare, decent volume plays you can get later on in the year. So, next guy we got up here is unfortunately our second running back of the day who is emerging in the wake of another person's injury. And that is Mr. Jordan Brunson, the running back out of Miami of Florida. Really, the story here is that Miami of Ohio running back Kenny Tracy went down the previous week due to what is described as a non-contact injury, and there's no, you know, official public diagnosis for Tracy. We just know he didn't play this past weekend, but, you know, that info alone, the fact there's a non-contact injury and he just was ruled out early on, just really not a good sign with regards to the rest of the season. So now we have Jordan Brunson, affectionately known about these parts as the Brunson Burner. He has taken over as the Redhawks feature back, and, you know, he has performed, although, you know, he hasn't quite been burning folks yet like I want him to. In his 2 games as a starter, Brunson's toted the rock 19-plus times in both of them, so the volume's there. That's great. His efficiency certainly leaves a lot to be desired, especially with him having less than 4 yards a carry in both contests, and my brain just got distracted there for a second. That is certainly something that needs to be fixed, right? Like, Brunson, like, we're not going to want to keep relying on him week to week if he's going to be toting the ball for less than 4 yards a carry. But I've also seen him do it before. This is what I wanted to look up real quick. Again, last year when he got significant run, he was averaging 5.6 yards per carry. So he's got it in him to improve on this efficiency. But again, he has to do that in order to kick into a higher gear for fantasy purposes. He also hasn't scored a touchdown so far as the starter. Like, he's had 2 games with 19 plus carries in both of them and hasn't scored a touchdown. You know, you can assume that that will even out as long as he continues to kind of get this around 20 touches per game. But, you know, a CFF folks can't help but flashback to the treatment that Keon Mosey got last year when he only had 4 touchdowns on 178 carries. So, definitely something to worry about there. This staff has some really, really weird priorities in terms of what they do with their feature backs. But regardless of the efficiency reservations, like, both in terms of yards and in terms of touchdowns, like, it's hard to find a player getting this much volume on the waiver wire this late in the season. And to me, that alone makes Brunson worth a grab. You don't have to start him immediately, but, you know, he's got really good matchups against Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan coming up here. Plenty of action for him to work with. I think he'll be fine. All right. Let's keep it going with our last running back of the day here, and that is Mr. Abu Sama, the running back out of Iowa State. This obviously comes with a huge asterisk in the fact that the moment Carson Hansen comes back, this probably goes out the window. But here's the thing. We got no real information on what that injury for Carson Hansen is looking like right now. And in Carson Hansen's absence, Abu Sama has been the clear workhorse back for Iowa State. 18 carries versus Cincinnati for 96 yards. He also had 2 catches for 8 yards in that game. And then this past week against Colorado, 24 rushing attempts for 177 yards and 2 touchdowns. He is everything with this offense. The passing game for Iowa State has definitely been falling apart. They just cannot get things going in that passing game right now. And so Sama will continue to be the focal point of this offense until Hansen comes back. You got a bye week this week, so that kind of gives Hansen another chance to come back. So again, if you pick up Sama in the 76% of leagues where he's still available, you know, I think you have to keep him on the bench. You can't start him. I mean, obviously this week you can't start him because he's on bye, but like that next week, you're not plugging him into your lineup until you get 100% confirmation that Carson Hansen will not be playing in that game. But for right now, like, if you're struggling at running back, this is a dice that I'm willing to cast, given the fact that he's had 42 carries in the last 2 games. combined, to be clear. I don't think you can pass up, like I said, especially if you're struggling at running back, I don't think you can pass up on taking that risk. So let's get to our honorable mentions for running backs. Oh my god, you guys can tell that I'm out of practice, can't you? Totally fine though. And once again, a little bit out of practice, I got Coleman Bennett listed on this honorable mentions page as well. Derp. It's fine though, because we got good honorable mentions. Again, Wayne Knight over the 30% mark, but he's been just absolutely fantastic for James Madison. Another 100-yard performance this past week. Instead of Coleman Bennett, we're going to pretend that I put Ja'Kyle Middlebrook, the running back out of Middle Tennessee State University, rostered on 18% of leagues. He had himself another nice game, 17 rush attempts, 93 yards. Didn't find the end zone, but again, that'll even out as time comes there. Kendrick Raphael, he was on bye this past week, but he's very much kind of really in the same boat as, you know, Jordan Brunson, where the volumes there haven't really seen the efficiency that we're going to really love from them, but I think that can improve as the season kind of goes along here. But unlike Brunson, Raphael actually can find the end zone this past game against Duke. He scored 2 touchdowns on the ground, so definitely something to keep an eye out there. Another honorable mention, this is very much another guy with an asterisk next to his name, and that's Owen Allen, the running back out of Air Force. 17 rush attempts just out of nowhere in this past game, 192 yards and 2 touchdowns. Again, very much feels like a waiver trap kind of guy that I would normally go after, but given the fact we've seen this history with Air Force, especially later in the season, they tend to find one guy and start riding with him. I don't know necessarily think that it's an accident that Allen got as many carries in this game, especially with them needing to score in this game. So I wouldn't be shocked if Allen continues to build upon this performance going forward, or that staff just could completely make him drop off the face of the earth. Very much a guy that you grab him this week and then you are holding him on your bench until you get more answers. And then last but not least, Nate Shepard, the running back out of Duke, doesn't have pretty elite volume, but does have elite efficiency, and he is slowly but surely going to earn more carries as the season goes on if he continues to have the performances he's had. On a bye week this past week, but then the week before against Cal, 12 rush attempts, 91 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's been incredible as a true freshman. Definitely somebody to keep an eye out for. Let's move on to wide receivers here. And I mentioned at the start of the show, or not the start of the show, but at the start of the waiver wire segment, that among wide receivers, there's really only like true one safe play, and that's this guy, Camden Brown. I don't think there's a safer play on the entire waiver wire this week than him. Clay Helton and this air raid offense have finally nailed what they've really been missing the last couple of years in trying to rely on a guy like Derwin Burgess, and that's a true big boundary wide receiver that a quarterback like JC French needs to have in order to be successful. Brown came from Auburn, so another one of these, you know, power four to G5 transfers, and the talk about his and French's connection was kind of there during the offseason, but now as we're getting deeper into Sun Belt play, we are really seeing that connection blossom here, because don't look now, Brown has put together 3 consecutive 100-yard games in a row, 118 versus Maine, 111 versus James Madison, and obviously the most recent explosion in 158 yards against Southern Miss. Brown, during that time, has seen 33 targets in those 3 games. Dalen Cobb, to this point, has typically been the volume play for this offense, but, you know, and you would have Brown kind of relying on the efficiency, those deeper targets down, deeper downfield throws, but now Brown's quickly becoming both in this offense, and that is a recipe for CFF success. Like, he's got some great upcoming games against Georgia State, Arkansas State as well, then a bye, and then more Sun Belt play after that. And, you know, unless there's some kind of injury or some kind of really weird fallout between, you know, Brown and French, like, I don't think there's a single game left on their schedule that I think you should really worry about starting Brown. I think he's an excellent, excellent pickup this week for CFF. Like I said, probably the safest pickup, especially in PPR format. Next guy, though. What noise was that? Good Lord. Let me take a sip of water real quick. Get my brain back on track. All right, there we go. I fixed everything. That fixed everything. Water is an amazing thing. God, you guys can tell that I'm out of practice. It's all good, though. You know, next guy up here is Amari Thomas, wide receiver out of Houston. And while he hasn't put up three consecutive 100-yard games in a row like, you know, Camden Brown has, he's pretty dang close. And he's quietly become the target hog in this Houston Cougars offense. Like, he's seen 9-plus targets in each of his last three games, leading to 70-plus yards in all three, 100-plus in two of them, and then most recently, 158 against Oklahoma State. Like, he's been, like, Thomas has been very efficient with his opportunities since the last few games. He's been averaging about 22 yards per catch, and just like with Camden Brown, like, what do I always say? You give me volume, you give me good efficiency, that's the golden recipe for any wide receiver in fantasy, and currently Thomas has that. The only thing that he's really missing is scoring opportunities. We'll talk about that in a second. It does help that, you know, Tanner Cozio is kind of banged up right now, so it does force Connor Wiegman to find another safety blanket, which Thomas has very clearly become given how many targets he has. The upcoming schedule as well for Thomas in Houston is fantastic. They avoid many of the potential landmines in the Big 12 in terms of, like, tougher defenses. And, in fact, it might be the opposite, right? Because you got Arizona, Arizona State, and West Virginia, teams that have been giving up tons of points in recent weeks. And, you know, Thomas may not have had a ton of scoring recently. Like, I think he said, yeah, one touchdown in the last three games. I think he'll bring in some touchdowns in those three games. So, but until he starts scoring more, I still think he's a very safe PPR play, right? Like, just looking at the last couple of weeks, 7 catches, 157 yards, that's 22.7 fantasy points. 2 catches, 70 yards, and a touchdown, that is 15 points right there. And then, you know, 16 points versus Oregon State. Just a very safe play for PPR purposes. Should not be as available as he is right now. God, I hesitate with this next one because it's so different than my usual person to go after in waiver wires. But I do want to talk about Landon Ellis, the wide receiver out of James Madison, currently rostered on 0% of leagues. And you guys know me. When it comes to picking waiver wire guys, like, I'm pretty conservative with who I target on the waiver wire. If you're not consistently getting volume, and I think your big games are really fluky, you know, hyper efficient and stuff like that, like, I'm not afraid to pass on guys like that. And, you know, that certainly has hurt me many times, but all in all, I think it serves me well to be, you know, cautious about picking up some of these guys off the waiver wire. So when I say that I'm kind of bucking that trend in a really big way with recommending Landon Ellis here, like, you know that I'm telling the truth. Like, there's something about Ellis that strikes me in a way that he is going, this is not just a one-time performance. This is a true weapon for James Madison emerging, right? Like, normally I would look at what Ellis did this past week and say he has all the hallmarks of a waiver wire trap. Like, one major explosion game, his volume's been kind of inconsistent. He plays for a team that isn't really known for throwing the ball. Like, the red flags are there. But, like I said, call it gut, call it whatever you want. Like, Ellis's performance this past Saturday with 120 yards and 3 touchdowns and 8 targets, I think it's a star being born for the Dukes. Like, Ellis is currently tied with Wayne Knight for the most number of targets on his team with 26 so far this year. But among actual receivers, Ellis is the clear option. And what's even better is that Ellis is far and away the most efficient receiver in this room. Like, he's at 15.9 yards per catch, 2.2 yards per route run. That second stat I consider a pretty good indicator of future success, so I love seeing that he was leading his wide receiver room with that by a pretty big margin. James Madison's offense has, you know, struggled somewhat this year, and with the emergence of a true deep threat like Ellis, I think that'll help him out a lot, and that'll keep him involved in games going forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see his kind of 4 to 5 targets he normally got to start the year become something more in line with the 8 targets we saw last week. And, you know, as with all Sun Belt teams, he'll have some great matchups coming up that he can definitely show his stuff in. He's got Old Dominion this week, a bye, and then Texas State. I think he's got several more big games in him, but it'll be quick for me to see whether I'm proven right or wrong on this one. Just a gut feel on this one. I think Ellis will become a much bigger weapon for James Madison moving forward. Next guy up, very similar profile to Amari Thomas, actually, in a pretty big way. And that is CJ Williams, the wide receiver out of Stanford, rostered on 13% of leagues. It's hard to recommend a wide receiver, being thrown to by Dr. Gulbranson there, starting quarterback at Stanford. But boy, CJ Williams, the volume here is just absolutely insane. 13 targets versus Virginia, 18 targets versus San Jose State, and then 9 targets this past weekend. Tally all of those up. And my friends, you got 40 targets in 3 games. So you're talking about 13 targets a game. And he's turned it into some nice pointage here for fantasy points. He's over 100 yards in each of his last 3 games, scored only 1 touchdown. But at the same time, if he's going to continue to get this volume, his efficiency is all right. It's nothing elite or anything, but still hovering around that 12-13 points per catch. So nothing bad per se either. I think you got to pick him up, especially in a PPR league. He'll have himself some nice games down the stretch. I forgot to write down Stanford's schedule here, so give me a second to pull that up. Yeah, so their upcoming schedule. They got Florida State, don't love that. Miami, don't love that. But then Pittsburgh, North Carolina, California, Notre Dame, those are all defenses that Stanford can find some pointage to put up. And even then, like I said, in a PPR league, you don't even need them to score that much. Right? CJ Williams, just PPR points-wise, let's take the touchdown away. We've got 19.3 points versus Virginia, 24 points versus San Jose State, and then 17.9 points versus SMU. That's still a playable wide receiver every any given week. The touchdowns just become bonuses at that point. So, last wide receiver we'll discuss here is Mr. Asad Wasim. I hope I pronounced that right. Wide receiver out of Florida Atlantic. This is so funny, actually, because I put out a tweet this past week where I called Asad Wasim one of the most annoying players in all of CFF right now. Why? Because if you're annoyed with the fact that Easton Messer hasn't gotten a lot of touchdowns this year, this man is why. This man, coming into this game, had just about 10% of the targets for Florida Atlantic, and a third of Florida Atlantic's passing game touchdowns. And it's that something has to balance out here, right? So my thought was all right, my thought was that the touchdowns were going to go away. But, and I'm trying to find, I want to make sure I credit the right person here. There was a comment underneath that tweet that basically said, or they could feed him the ball more. Yep, here it is, Jason Burlingame. That they could just get him the ball more. Well, Jason, that's exactly what Florida Atlantic did this past week. They targeted him 12 times, 7 receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, I don't fully blame Caden Veldkamp, right? If this guy keeps scoring touchdowns for you, just get him the ball more. And, if that's going to be the case, again, I feel like I'm walking into potentially another landmine here, but given how much this offense throws the ball, they need another guy to emerge outside of just Easton Messer. I thought that was going to be Jayshon Platt here for a second, but Wasim, with all the touchdowns he's scoring, those touchdowns seem to be kind of translating into more opportunities for him in any given game. So I would say that makes him worth picking up off the waiver wire this week. Again, you don't have to start him immediately, but holding on to him on your bench, I think that's fine. Honorable mentions at wide receiver. Got some fun ones here. Some names you guys know I'll run through real quick. Victor Snow, another good game. DeMarcus Lacy, another fantastic game. He's rostered still on only 10% of leagues. He has to be picked up so much this week, y'all. He just keeps putting... I think they had 300-yard games in a row. Just absolutely phenomenal. The top one there, Mekhi Dansey, out of Florida State. I do remember talking about him as a waiver trap early on of the season. And I mentioned during this game, is there a player with more a more lopsided touch to touchdown ratio than Dansey this year? And much like Wasim out of Florida Atlantic, Dansey, again, their solution was just getting Dansey the ball more, because this past week, 10 targets, 7 receptions, 133 yards, and 2 touchdowns. A huge game for Danzy. Definitely shows that they're starting to work him into, you know, not just a gadget guy. He is a clear weapon for this Florida State team. He is also benefiting a ton from the fact that this whole wide receiver room for Florida State is injured. Squirrel White, injured. Javon Boggs, injured. Deuce Robinson, in this game against Pitt this last week, injured. And I think that was a big reason why Danzy started getting more targets, right? He kind of took over that Deuce Robinson role. I've mentioned before, Gus Malzahn loves his big, tall, outside wide receivers. And Danzy basically slotted right into that with Deuce Robinson gone. If Deuce Robinson's out for any time, Danzy's a must pickup, in my opinion. I think he'll be huge down the stretch. If Deuce Robinson comes back, less excited. And then the last couple of guys here, Brayton Pagan, wide receiver to Utah State. I've mentioned him before. He's a wide receiver one, deep threat for Utah State, so definitely worth picking up there. And then DJ Epps, another guy that in my head, I'm saying like, hey, this feels like a trap, feels like a waiver trap. But given what we know what Troy has done before in terms of the wide receivers they've produced for CFF, I'm not going to ignore a guy like DJ Epps that comes out of nowhere with 13 targets, 10 receptions, 148 yards, and 2 touchdowns in a game where Troy had to crawl their way back in order to win. That's the kind of performance that does earn you a ton of respect in that locker room with that coaching staff. And I do think that Epps is another guy, kind of like Ellis, that is going to continue to see his role improve as the season goes along. Rod Thomas is fine. You know, Mothershed is fine as well, but Epps, I think, really kind of showed he has that potential to take on a potential Devontae Ross role. Will it happen? I have no clue. Again, another guy that I would say pick up, watch what Troy does this week, and go from there. Let's finish up here. Let's talk about some tight ends here. We'll talk about Bowden Green, the tight end out of Kansas, rostered on 5% of leagues. I will admit, I kind of messed up with the tight ends this week because both the tight ends I'm talking about this week are on bye. And normally I do try to avoid tight ends who are on bye the week I recommend them, but I'm not sure we can really wait with regards to Green here. Like, Green had himself an epic game this past week against Texas Tech. 14 targets for him, turned into 13 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. If you had him for whatever reason in a tight end premium league, you were just women in it. You love what you saw this past week. Even in a PPR league, you were just loving what you saw. And with Deshaun Hanika, I feel like Hanika, I don't know. Kansas starting tight end this year, he's down for the year. Green has quickly slid right into the starting spot and has been even better than he was, right? Like, Kansas has been very purposeful in their use of tight ends this season, especially around the red zone. They've been getting a ton of love down there. In between Green and Hanika, they combined for 6 touchdowns this year, which is a third of Kansas' passing touchdowns this year. So now we're likely going to see Green get all of those opportunities down near the goal line that would have been kind of split between him and Hanika. So that screams to me that Green is just not done scoring. And, you know, I don't expect him to have another 14-target game this season, but if he does kind of continue to get consistent volume week in and week out, that's an extra bonus and an epic grab off the waiver wire this week at tight end. The other one I want to discuss is Richie Anderson, a guy that hasn't really found the end zone recently, but he's got the volume and the production, especially in a PPR league, that you'll like, right? Really looking at these last two games where, one, Fresno State's passing game has started to figure itself out a little bit. Josiah Freeman was a guy I considered putting on the waiver wire for this week as well. I just need to see a little bit more from him going forward. But Richie Anderson, 8 targets in the last two games each. You know, 67, 70 yards, very consistent production there. Hasn't found the end zone. I think that'll remedy itself here in the next coming weeks, especially, again, facing a team like San Diego State or Boise State. He'll have his scoring opportunities. I think he's a great pickup for right now. That's really all I got to say on Anderson. And then a couple of tight ends just to throw out there. As Ronald mentions, Peter Clark, tight end out of Temple. Joshua Long, the tight end of Eastern Michigan. And then Sam Brusch. Sam Brusch, just like CJ Williams, bro. They're coming back here. He had himself an 11-target, 8-reception, 89-yard game this past week. he's really turned it around since the start of the season. So last but not least, let's discuss some DST streaming options for you guys this week. And we're really at the point in the season where, one, again, there's no cupcake matchups for us to really take advantage of anymore. At least the teams that like would consider other teams in their conference cupcake matchups, those defenses are long since picked up off the waiver wire. So let's take a look at some guys here. Really, what we're doing is we're playing, it's less about the defense itself and more the offenses that they're playing, right? One, Ohio going up against NIU. NIU has not scored 14 points or over 14 points in a game this season. Ohio's defense is pretty solid for a MAC defense. I'm willing to ride that. California, another defense has been pretty solid, but really we're playing on the fact that they'll be playing North Carolina this week. North Carolina, obviously in a huge bit of turmoil there with the Bill Belichick drama and stuff like that. I don't think that team is together at all. I think Cal will be able to shut down that offense pretty easily. Cincinnati going up against Oklahoma State. The Sam Jackson experiment was fun as an experiment and in theory, not so great in the results. Cincinnati's defense is pretty solid. I think they'll shut down Oklahoma State pretty easily this week. UMass, especially without Jaquan Gibson, absolute joke of an offense. Buffalo, a decent defense in the MAC. They'll be able to shut down UMass, as is pretty much everybody has done this season. And then Pittsburgh. I don't love Pittsburgh's defense, but they are going up against Syracuse this week, and Syracuse has Ricky Collins starting, and that's pretty much worth about 15 DST points right there. So, again, just playing off the offenses really more than anything that they'll be facing this week. It leads to a lot more risk with DSTs, but, you know, we're kind of past the point where we can really find a lot of safe plays for DSTs. All right. All right, guys. With that, we come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. Again, appreciate all the understanding and everything. And again, as I stumble through the show a little bit, as I've said the word again 100,000 times, as I've said all right about 40 times, as I've said a bunch of my filler words an uncountable amount of times, I appreciate you guys for bearing with me. Still out of practice. We'll get right back into it. But until then, if you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Until then, we'll see you guys back here next Monday where we have more waiver wire pickups. And then also, make sure you tune in Tuesday night. We'll have the Start Sit live streams back up and running for you guys. So until then, really, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.